This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown, and it is time for another edition of
Texan.
Our monthly look at Texas linguistics, wherein we break down the speech of one well-known Texan at a time, with Lars Henricks, a professor of English at the University of Texas at Austin and the director of the Texas English Linguistics Lab. Professor, welcome back.
Thanks, David.
And we also have a special guest today joining us in the studio for reasons that will soon become clear, the Texas Standard's own Joy Diaz. Hey there, Joy.
Hey, David. Hi, Lars.
Hi, Joy.
So, Professor Henricks, who are we talking about this week?
Well, David, like you said, usually in the segment we talk about the speech of one prominent Texan, but today it's going to be a little different. We thought we're going to talk about a key aspect of the Texas linguistic landscape, Spanglish.
Whoa, okay, interesting. Spanglish. I think most people are probably familiar with Spanglish, at least as a term, but perhaps you should give us the technical definition here.
Okay, so it's not as easy to define as you might think. Spanglish obviously is some form of a mix of Spanish and English, but it's different from other ways that languages can be mixed. It's not your regular kind of bilingualism, so it's not just code switching. It's a special kind of linguistic practice that exists only in certain social spaces where there is a strong presence of the two cultures, like the southern border of Texas, where there is equal presence of both English-speaking culture and Spanish-speaking culture.
Joy, as someone who speaks both English and Spanish and is a Texan, does that definition make sense to you?
Yes, there's even a class now at St. Mary's University in San Antonio for Spanglish. And I know that purists are having heart attacks with it, but yeah, it does make sense.
So maybe we could present an example to illustrate this. Now, we all have kids, so let's take a sentence I'm sure we've all said from time to time. Where's your lunchbox? Now, Joy, how would you say that in Spanish?
Okay, so if I'm speaking Spanish, I would say, ¿Dónde está tu lonchera? But if I'm speaking like purist Spanish, I would say, ¿Dónde está tu caja de almuerzo?
Okay, got it. Now, what about in Spanglish?
Okay, so if we're rushing at home, I would say, ¿Dónde está tu lunchbox?
Oh, I like that. I like
With
that.
Snapping of fingers.
Yeah, clear difference here. So, Professor, what do you hear going on there?
So yeah, Spanglish is the least formal, the most real mixing of the languages, and "Dónde está tu lunchbox?" You have a code switch and a very tightly integrated form of the two languages. Although you still have like "Dónde está tu" is pure Spanish, lunchbox is pure English. Mm-hmm. So it's not one of those forms that really only exist in those border regions. Mm. But it's already a very tight mix that's not purist to either language, right?
But lunchbox is, of course, an English word. And I understand that this convergence will sometimes give you words that are completely unique to Spanglish. Can either of you think of any examples?
For instance, biles, for paying bills.
Yeah, there's a one that you hear a lot is parquear, which is not a Spanish word. In Spanish, to park a car, you would use the verb estacionar, but parquear is using the English verb park with Spanish morphology, and it really only happens in places like the Valley and Laredo.
I understand that there's a phrase for can I call you back? Is that right?
Yeah, I think this is very unique, isn't it, Lars? Like te llamo patras, which is something that you definitely would not find in Mexico City, for instance, but those of us who have been influenced by both languages, by English and Spanish, te llamo patras makes perfect sense. I'll call you back.
Yeah, but it shows how you need to know English to make sense of the Spanish phrase. It uses only Spanish words, but it has an underlying English kind of logic, the patras,
right.
meaning back. You have to kind of know at least a little bit of English to make sense of it. purist Spanish speakers are not happy with this. I know quite a few couples in Austin where one speaker is from the border region, a Spanglish speaker, and the other person is from farther south in Mexico or even Latin America, mm-hmm. and they often have arguments about what proper Spanish is.
Well, now I can imagine that there are some instances where you could have some confusion between, you have both English and Spanish, you know, with idioms and words that sound like one thing but mean another. I think, what is that called, Professor? False cognates?
False cognates, yeah, or false friends. Words that look the same in both languages and are used as meaning the same, whereas they don't really in the standard languages. So there's, for example, libreria in Spanglish can mean library, but the actual Spanish meaning of libreria is bookstore.
Oh.
And for library, you would say in Spanish biblioteca. Another good example is recordar. In Spanglish, you can use recordar to mean record, when actually in standard Spanish, the word means remember.
Hmm.
And if you wanted to say to record in standard Spanish, you would say grabar. They're visually similar, so they are used as being similar because there's such a strong presence of the other language that makes this happen.
Huh. Joy, have you ever encountered a misunderstanding by using Spanglish with a Spanish speaker?
Oh, have I ever? I have, but I think my sympathy goes to my dad because he was an English speaker in Mexico City and he was a minister. And one word that got him in trouble a lot was the word embarrassed, because embarrassed is very similar to embarazada. Embarazada means pregnant, and embarrassed, of course, means, you know, embarrassed.
Well, now here's a question for both of you. Would it be accurate to call Spanglish its own language, maybe? Hmm. What do you think, Joy?
I am not a purist of languages, and I definitely embrace the fact that both Spanish and English are alive and evolving. And as a mother of two kids who are learning both languages, I have a lot of sympathy for this merger and a lot of sympathy for this, in a way, child that has evolved from these two languages. So I am in love with Spanglish.
Yeah,
But I know that not everybody is.
Lars, what do you think about the question of whether or not this could be its own language?
Maybe not yet. It's not defined enough, although there are a few terms that everybody will tell you are good examples of Spanglish, like parquear and a few of those we've spoken about. But it's too fluid, and I think you define it best as a practice, as a linguistic practice in a certain social space. For Spanglish to become a language, it would need a governing class that speaks it. You would need a governor or a president speaking Spanglish, and then very quickly it would become the norm, and you would have books describing how to speak Spanglish properly. And, you know, it goes quickly. It's a political question whether something is a dialect or a language.
Well, something tells me we might get there faster than anyone imagines. You never know. We've been talking today with Lars Henriks. He's professor of English at the University of Texas at Austin, and he's the director of the Texas English Linguistics Lab. Professor, thanks a lot as always.
Thank you so much, David.
And we're also so grateful for the expertise of Texas Standard's own producer, Joy Diaz. Joy, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you both.